the failure of atheism in the Soviet Union. Why are we tackling this? We are seeing a resurgence of atheism. We have seen so many people attacking Christianity. We have so many people coming with atheistic presuppositions, telling us how Christianity has failed and Christianity is evil and Christianity is guilty of the worst things in history, and that atheism is the hope of a new age for peace and tranquility and tolerance and all of that. Well, let's look at how atheism did in the country that made atheism its number one ideological goal. First and foremost, we need to understand the heart and soul of Karl Marx. I could not believe, as I walked around the waterfront today doing this outreach, seeing that they've got a new format on young Marx, as in M-A-R-K, Marx, as in Karl Marx. You know, this wonderful, tremendous economist who brought peace and tranquility and prosperity to all in the world, or not. In his manifesto of 1448, Karl Marx wrote, "The theory of the communists may be summed up in a single sentence, abolition of private property." That's communism, abolition of private property. You reproach us with intending to do away with your property. Precisely so. That is just what we intend, said Karl Marx. To this end, he advocated abolition of property rights. Now, let me ask a question. Have we, in the free democratic West, adopted Marxist ideas? Well, consider, what is Marx's first principle of the Communist Manifesto? Abolition of property rights through property owners being required to pay rents and rates to the state. Where in the Bible does God give governments the right to charge any tax on property? The state doesn't own property. How dare they charge property taxes? They are civil servants. They're meant to serve the citizens. They don't own our property, but actually they do. Try not paying your property taxes and see how quickly you can lose it. In places like Zambia or Malawi, the state owns all the property and you can only rent it for 99 years. Now, when you buy the property, you don't rent for 99 years, but for the remainder of the 99 years since their so-called independence. And that means nobody owns any property except the state in those countries. That's actually extremely disturbing. Number two, Marx's manifesto required a heavy progressive graduated income tax. Now, consider the fact that the Americans, the American colonists, when they decide to have their Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, 1776 Declaration of Independence and all that sort of thing, they were being taxed by Great Britain 4%. Now, considering Britain had just fought a big war against France, which owned Canada, in order to protect the American colonists from the French and the French and Indian War, it wasn't in the British mind that unreasonable that the Americans would be expected to pay some tax to recoup the phenomenal costs of that French and Indian War, which was actually part of the Seven Years' War. And yet the Americans considered 4% tax so oppressive they had to rebel. Of course, there were a few other issues, but the point is, how much tax do Americans pay today?
30%.
And if you counted property taxes, sales taxes, state taxes, local taxes with your IRS, I'm told it can go into the 40%. At least under Obama it was. Vladimir Lenin said the way to crush the bourgeoisie, which is another word for the hard-working, productive, innovative people who basically pay for everything, is to grind them between the millstones of taxation and inflation. Bear in mind, inflation is heavily taxed. And you know this when you look at Zimbabwe, where suddenly a person's entire earnings and property rights can just be swept away, destroyed in months, and suddenly everything is worthless. Except that the bankers and the government seem to have gotten more wealthy while everyone else has lost everything. How does that work? Well, that's inflation, hidden tax. Third principle in Marxist Manifesto of 1848, abolition of all rights of inheritance by taxing inheritance, death tax. Now, wait a minute, a good man lays up inheritance for his children and his grandchildren. But now, your grandfather who paid inheritance, a paid tax, I should say, his inheritance is now going to be taxed further? That's stealing from the dead. That's wicked. That's Marxism. Number four, confiscation of the property of immigrants and all rebels to the state. In America, it's shocking how the government can literally confiscate people's properties, sometimes just under an accusation without it even being tested in the court of law. And they say, oh, well, you know, this is under racketeering, or this is under dealing with gangs and drug dealers. But next thing, you know, they're confiscating property of pro-lifers who were arrested outside of pro-life abortion, like what we were doing today, ministering outside of abortion clinic. There are people in America being locked in prison for doing just what we did this morning. And, of course, people have been shot in the back in places like the Workers' Paradise in the Democratic Republic by the Stasi. Peter Fetcher, 18-year-old, the day after his birthday, being carried back after being shot in the back by his own government for attempting to move from one part of Berlin to the other. Fifth principle of Marxist manifesto, centralization of credit in banks of the state by means of a national bank with an exclusive monopoly of money supply. South African Reserve Bank is not South African, it's got no reserves, and it's not a bank. The Federal Reserve of America, it's not federal, it's got no reserves, and it's not a bank. I mean, it's a scam, it's a scheme, it's a complete and utter ripoff. If you want to understand how this works, we've got books by Stephen Mitford Goodson, who used to be a director of the Southern Reserve Bank, and he has lectured here many a time at our Reformation Society and informed us that it is nothing but a complete scam. It is grand theft on the ground. He said, when you talk about state capture, he said state capture happened back under Hendrik Verwoerd, under Jan Smuts. Jan Smuts did state capture when he introduced the South African Reserve Bank. And what the South African Reserve Bank is, he said, basically, the same as all these reserve banks, which are all run by Rothschild, basically. There they've got a building, and they've got a desk, and there's a man who's got a chair at the desk, and in the drawer he's got a checkbook. And the government representative walks in and says, we need to make a loan of, shall we make it simple, like R1 billion. No problem, that's what the Reserve Bank exists for. He opens the drawer, pulls out the checkbook, signs a check for R1 billion, hands it up to the government representative, walks out, then I enter their computer. Southern government owes us R1 billion at X amount of interest, 26% or whatever. And the money doesn't exist. It's a blip on a computer screen. It's fiction. They've just created the money on a computer screen because they have no reserves. They're not a bank. And this checkbook has absolutely no bank account behind it. It's a total fraud. But the interest you've got to pay every year is real. And you've got to pay hundreds of millions and soon billions of dollars to a Rothschild bank, which is not accountable to South Africa or to our laws. And this has been done all over the world. Well, there's a few countries that have not gone for this. Stephen Mitford Goodson has written a book, Inside the South Reserve Bank, and he's also written A History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind. And he's pointed out that the countries that have not accepted this include in recent years countries like Syria and Libya, Iran and North Korea. Now, it's just coincidental that they happen to be targeted by the West, but anyway. And, of course, in our history, we had one man who tried to end this. Hendrik Verwoerd had the Hoek Commission, a judge, who was investigating the role of the Southern Reserve Bank in undermining the country and determined to rid our country of the Southern Reserve Bank. And he got shot on the 9th, on the 6th of the 9th, 66. And the date was even chosen by the Rothschilds and was totally organized by the banksters. And the story of that's in the book written by Stephen Mitford Goodson on him. At about the same time, America's president, John F. Kennedy, was also trying to get rid of the Reserve Bank, the so-called Reserve Bank of America, the Federal Reserve. And he got very publicly assassinated as well. And there's other major countries that have refused to do this, and that includes the Third Reich of Germany, Mussolini's Italy, Japan, and so on. And you may say, whoa, this is getting a bit too far. Exactly, that's why Stephen Mitford Goodson wrote a book on economics, basically saying communists are gaining control of the countries through the banks. And you say, wait a minute, aren't the banks capitalist and the communists against it? No. The bankers and the communists work together. They are not for freedom or free enterprise. And this is what's behind a lot of what's going on in countries today. In fact, Stephen Mitford Goodson challenged my thinking because I love history, especially military history and missions history. I thought everything was related to spiritual, theological, doctrinal, and military background. But he says, no, well, the wars of the 20th century have mostly been bankers' wars. Or shall we call them the banksters? Instead of, you know, gangster. Sixth principle of Marxist manifesto, centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. Why should the state control radio, TV, newspapers, and everything? Well, control the information, control the people. By the way, who's the chancellor of every university in Zimbabwe? It's been Robert Mugabe. And so on. Why should the state control means of communication? Seventh principle of Communist Manifesto, factories and instruments of production need to be owned by the state, and the wilderness areas must be nationalized by the state. Why? Well, they want to control everything, basically. Number eight, equal obligation of all to be put to work by the state. This is Marxist Manifesto. Number nine, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. The goal is, as in, how many have read the book 1984? Okay, what does the Ministry of Plenty do? They organize starvation. What does the Ministry of Truth do? They deal in lies. What does the Ministry of Love do? Torture. What does the Ministry of Peace do? War. That's the way it works. Combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of all distinction between town and country, a more equitable distribution of the populace over the whole country. So basically, you have what they call a collective farm, which is another name for concentration farms. So, for example, just to take in America. 1936, American government produced 2,300 pages of law. That was extreme, extreme. That's under a serious communist FDR, frankly, very Roosevelt. But 2012, 79,000 pages. I mean, regulations going out of control. You cannot tell me that any member of the US government has read all these damn 79,000 pages in 1 year. It's humanly impossible. How on earth can they pass so many laws when they can't even read them, let alone understand the implications of these stupid regulative laws? Number 11, the Slow Marxist Manifesto, free and compulsory education for all children in state schools. Free and compulsory, well, the word free is a lie because you pay for it through your taxes. Not that the government can ever give you anything free. When a government gives you something free, it's because they've stolen the money from you in the first place, either through inflation or through taxation or through both. Your children's children will live under communism. You Americans are so gullible. No, you will not accept communism outright, but we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands. Now that is from Nikita Khrushchev. Karl Marx wrote, "The abolition of religion as the illusory happiness of mankind is a requisite for the real happiness." Abolition of religion. The Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx wrote, "Communism abolishes eternal truth. It abolishes all religion and all morality." And to prove it, they've destroyed tens of thousands of churches. Karl Marx wrote, "I wish to avenge myself against the one who rules above. I shall build my throne high overhead. Cold, tremendous shall its summit be. For its bulwark, superstitious dread. For its martial, blackest agony." Does that not remind you of Lucifer in Isaiah speaking about how he's going to lift himself above the Almighty? Karl Marx wrote to his father, "New gods will have to be installed." And new gods have been installed. What is this? It's a pyramid-like structure. It's a temple to the honor of Vladimir Lenin, the god of communism. And millions of Marxists have filed through this too to look at this corpse. And by the way, that's not really Karl Marx. They're, what do you call them? The ox taxidermists. The taxidermists didn't do a very good job. And so his fingers fell off, the nose fell off, the ears fell off. So basically what you're looking at is like Madame Tussauds waxwork dummy. But nevertheless, there's no doubt that the creep is dead. In his drama, ONLM. Look at that ONLM. ONLM. It's a very satanic thing. So they like to invert the cross, reverse things. So you can see Emmanuel. It's just an inversion of the name. They mix it up. The hellish vapors rise and fill the brain, till I go mad, and my heart is utterly changed. See the sword? The prince of darkness sold it to me. For me beats the time and gives the signs. Ever more boldly I play the dance of death. Now these are Karl Marx's own writings. It comes from Richard Rembrandt's Marx and Satan book. Marx loved to quote the words of Faust, "Everything in existence is worth being destroyed." So think of everything you like. The forests around Cape Town. Our monuments, our museums. Our families, our churches. Everything in existence is worth being destroyed. If there is something which devours, I'll leap within it. Though I bring the world to ruins, the world which bulks between me and the abyss, I'll smash to pieces with my enduring curses. Without violence, nothing is ever accomplished in history. This is Karl Marx. Thus heaven I forfeited, I know it full well, my soul once true to God is chosen for hell. This is a poem written by Karl Marx. In his poem Human Pride, Marx wrote, "With disdain I will throw my gauntlet," that's my glove, "full in the face of the world and see the collapse of this pygmy giant, whose fall will not stifle my ardor. Then I will wander godlike and victorious through the ruins of the world, and giving my words an active force, I will feel equal to my creator." And this part is classic Soviet Union propaganda art of the 1930s in Stalin's era. The Red Banner, Communist Party leading it. What's he leading against? What's about to fall? The church. He's about to destroy the church. How do you destroy the West? Vladimir Lenin, 1921, said at the Communist International Comintern, "Corrupt the young, get them away from religion, encourage their interest in sex, make them superficial by focusing the interest in sports, sensual entertainments, and trivialities. Always preach true democracies, but seize power as fast and as ruthlessly as possible. Encourage government's extravagance, destroy its credit, produce fear with rising prices, inflation, and general discontent. Encourage disorders, foster a lenient attitude towards disorders," in other words, riots. "By specious argument, cause the breakdown of the old moral virtues, honesty, sobriety, and self-restraint. Cause registration of firearms to leave the population defenseless." And you'll see a film later tonight that'll dramatize this. It's a Harvest, which is highly recommended by Movie Guide, speaking about the Holodomor in Ukraine in the 1930s. Or dramatizing it, I should say. And this is why, when I grew up, the whole of Southern Africa was aflame with Marxist revolution, terrorist groups with Soviet-provided RPGs, AK-47s, PKMs, Soviet submarines and warships around our shores, Soviet missiles in Angola, tanks, the entire Cuban mechanized division in Angola fighting our forces. Why? All because of Marxist vision. Karl Marx's good friend Friedrich Engels wrote, "Karl Marx is a monster possessed by 10,000 devils." Now this isn't criticism, this is praise from his best friend. This is a compliment. Robert Payne, a friend of Karl Marx, wrote that Karl Marx had the devil's view of the world and the devil's malignity. Sometimes he seemed to know he was accomplishing the works of evil. Now again, Robert Payne is not criticizing him. He's praising him. This is praise. He knew he was accomplishing the works of evil. So, what do we think of a Christian Marxist? That's like a God-fearing atheist. Karl Marx wrote he wanted to hurl gigantic curses on mankind. Why would he hate mankind so much? If you hate God, you love death. And even though man has fallen and corrupted, there's still something of the image of God on man, especially redeemed man, that would make him want to destroy God's creation. Marx quoted positively from the Paris Communard Florence, who declared, "Our enemy is God. Hatred of God is the beginning of wisdom." Now what's that an inversion of? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And they're saying the hatred of God is the beginning of wisdom. Communism is an inversion of everything in Christianity. I would say our greatest enemy in the world is communism. I would even put Islam just slightly behind communism. I know at the moment Islam looks like a more clear and present danger, but in terms of the last century, communism has killed more Christians than even Islam has. Karl Marx's family life was a disaster, and that's putting it nicely. He had 7 children by his wife Jenny, another by his household maid Helen DeMuth. 3 of Karl Marx's children starved to death. I mean, what kind of father lets his children starve to death while he is gambling and he is working for revolution and printing books like Marxist Manifesto and Das Kapital, and his children starved to death? 3 of them? 5 of his children died prematurely. One of his daughters, Eleanor, married Edward Aveling, a Satanist known for his blasphemous lectures on the wickedness of God and for his poem of love to Satan. 2 of his daughters committed suicide, as did his wife. I mean, this man must have been a bundle of laughs to live with. His wife and 2 daughters committed suicide? 3 daughters died of malnutrition, starvation? And this man is lifted up in our schools as a hero, and they've got full-color picture books in primary schools of Karl Marx as separate books. So here's Karl Marx and his family and Friedrich Engels, and by the way, they were very debauched and evil, and their daughters were evil, unbelievably evil, the things that they got up to, and I mean probably demon possessed from young. One of his daughters, she became one of the key leaders of the Marxist and feminist movement. Karl Marx wrote that he did not love anybody, that he is entirely comfortable with hatred. Couldn't even say he loved his own family. And this is a, do you understand that communism says that they must destroy every single tie of blood, soil, family, religion, faith, people, nation. They want to break it all down. They hate every tribe, tongue, language, and nation. They want to break down every tie. Because what is globalism? It's antithesis of nationalism, family, denominations, church. They've got to break it all down. Because what's the goal of communism? One world government, one world religion, one world economy, a classless world society of world communism. Classless. No families, no religion, nothing. That's communism. That's the goal. He referred to the Slavic people, like the Russians, as ethnic trash and prophesied that their very name will vanish. It's funny that he then got his most enthusiastic supporters amongst the Slavic people in Russia when he regarded them as rubbish or trash. He dismissed Mexicans as lazy, although most Mexicans today would call themselves Marxists. He described Negroes as frozen at prehistoric levels who would never contribute anything worthwhile to society. So what's Robert Mugabe getting all excited about Karl Marx for? I mean, Karl Marx hates whites, but he loves Karl Marx. I mean, Mugabe hates whites, but loves Karl Marx. Huh? In his manifesto, Karl Marx wrote, "We destroy the most hallowed oblations. We replace home education with social education." Vladimir Lenin declared, "Atheism is the natural and inseparable part of communism. We must hate. Hatred is the basis of communism." And that's true. Anyone recognize who this creep is? Leonid Trotsky, head of the Red Army. He had some blood-stained hands. He was responsible for the execution of the royal family, the Tsar, and of millions of others. Under Vladimir Lenin, one of the slogans of the Soviet Union was, "We fight against God," to snatch believers from him. This has been documented by so many different books of Voice of the Martyrs and of ministries to the Soviet Union. A prominent slogan of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union was, "Let us drive out the capitalists from the earth and God from heaven." Imagine. And there are Christian communists and there are Christian Marxists in the world today. How do you explain it? Do they just not understand? Are they ignorant? Are they stupid? Are they in denial? Are they hypocrites? Are they liars? Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the greatest Russian author and poet of the 20th century, wrote the Gulag Archipelago, One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, and a mountain of other great books. Alexander Solzhenitsyn declared, the world has never before known a godlessness as organized, as militarized, as tenaciously malevolent, that's malicious, as that preached by Marxism. Within the philosophical system of Marx and Lenin, and at the heart of their philosophy, hatred of God is a principal driving force, more fundamental in all their political and economic pretensions. He's saying people who say that Marxism is economics and politics don't understand. Marxism at its heart, this man has spent 14 years in a Soviet concentration camp. He's a Russian. He knows the Gulag from the inside. He's the one who gave us the insight. He even gave the world the name Gulag. It's just pretensions. Economics and politics is eyewash. It's just a veneer. At the heart of Marxism is hatred towards God. Militant atheism is not merely incidental or marginal to communist policy. It's not a side effect. It is the central pivot. To achieve its diabolical ends, communism needs to control a population devoid of religious and national feeling. And this entails destruction of faith and nationhood. That is the goal of communism. Just think what communism's done to Zimbabwe. Destroyed the economy, destroyed their churches, destroyed the country to the point that in Zimbabwe, half of the population has fled. And people are just struggling to survive. People aren't thinking about how can I make a better country for my great-grandchildren. Right now the concern is, where do I get my next meal from and how are we going to manage? How are we going to survive this week? Communists proclaim both these objectives openly. What objectives? Destruction of faith and nationhood. And just as openly, they put them into practice. Karl Marx never ran a company. He never held a political office. He never oversaw any accounts. He never had a job, any job. He never did a job. How can he be called a worker? He is supported throughout his life by his friend Friedrich Engels, the son of a wealthy factory owner. He is considered by many to be the greatest social, political, economic philosopher of all time. Every application of his theory has ended in failure. I mean, think of North Korea compared to South Korea. Think of East Germany versus West Germany. Think of the Soviet Union versus anywhere else that's free. Think of Angola or Mozambique under communism, or Ethiopia under communism, or Cuba, where 3 million people have fled. What used to be an island paradise, it became an island hellhole. Honestly, has Marxist ideas ever resulted in any good anywhere in the world? I defy anyone to find one example of any good it's ever done. And yet you've got people who act like he's some respectable genius that we should all look up to. This man is a lowlife. If you can't look after your family, you're not fit for any political office. Simple. You can see a man who's a disaster on his personal life is not qualified to be a political leader. And nobody ever voted for him. And he never even tried to be voted for. And yet there's people who look to this creep, this demon-possessed antichrist pagan, and they look to him like he's some kind of example or some kind of source of wisdom. He is the voice of Satan. Democracy, Karl Marx said, is the road to socialism. By the way, democracy in the Bible, where do you see a good example of democracy in the Bible? I'll give you one. Pontius Pilate turned to the population and said, who shall I release? The terrorist, murderer, Barabbas, or Jesus of Nazareth? Barabbas, release Barabbas. What shall I do with Jesus? Crucify him, crucify him. But he's your king. Crucify him. We have no king but Caesar. His blood be upon us and upon our children. That's the first and only example of democracy I can see in the Bible. The mob chose Barabbas. And they rejected Christ. That's democracy. There's another word for it, demon crazy. The Bible doesn't give us democracy. What does the Bible give us? The rule of law. Representative states, representative republics, or a constitutional monarchy. I mean, these are biblical concepts. The rule of law, you don't determine what's right and wrong by 51%. Public opinion isn't the way you determine law. You determine what does God say, what does the Bible say, what is right. And then you try to do it in accordance with law, not in accordance with what the majority think. The majority are normally deluded. I mean, the majority are actually generally stupid, like sheeple. They will choose to love those who hate them. You just take how these people like Marx, Lenin, Mugabe, they say, we care for the poor, vote for us, and we're going to provide you with jobs, food, homes, bread, whatever you want, they'll promise. And then what do they do when they get in power? They enrich themselves, they oppress everybody else, they bludgeon the people, they break the people's arms and legs, they chop off their heads, they shoot them in the head, they burn the villages, and all this, and they're still called liberators from freedom fighters. At 2 Peter 2:19, they promise them freedom while they themselves are slaves of depravity, or slaves of corruption, as some verses put it. And this is documented by the Black Book of Communism. Every single revolutionary, without exception, has made the country worse than it was before. Every single so-called freedom fighter has not brought freedom. Every one of them is called oppression. They didn't fight, and they didn't bring freedom. So how can they be called freedom fighters? So, let me give you some example of how communism works in practice. The KGB. By the way, you know what KGB stands for if you were to translate it from the Russian to the English? Department of Homeland Security. Sounds so nice. I've had Russians explain to me that's what KGB stood for. Department of Homeland Security. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 to 17 is a verse that was quoted by Richard von Brandt in Romania when the communists called all the ministers together for a big meeting in Bucharest, and he had the ministers walk up to the podium, one after the other on the stage, say, communism is Christianity in action. Jesus said, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Communism is a fulfillment of the teachings of Jesus. In the book of Acts, you see communism in action. And they carried on and on with this nonsense. And Sabrina von Brandt turned to her husband, Lutheran pastor Richard von Brandt, and said, go wipe the shame from the face of the body of Christ. And he stood up and he quoted this whole verse verbatim. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? What part is a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreements has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive it. Now Richard von Brandt said that, and he went straight to jail. Do not pass go, do not collect £200. I mean, this is like a slap in the face of the communists, and he basically defied them, and so he ended up in prison. 14 years, ultimately. Tortured for Christ. You can get the story in Richard von Brandt's books, available on our shelves and in our bookshop. He says that all those liars and cowards who stood up and said what the communists wanted, they ended up in the same prison cells he did, just longer. They got there a bit later. But he said there was a big difference. He, Richard von Brandt, was in prison with a clear conscience. They were tortured by their cowardice and their showing cowardice in the face of the enemy. I mean, the time of battle, when the time comes when you've got to stand up, you've got to stand up. When the time comes when you've got to speak up, you've got to speak up. When time comes, you've got to step out and fight the good fight of faith. You can't go AWOL, desert, and call yourself a conscientious objector. I mean, we cannot be deserters and conscientious objectors and pacifists in the fight of good fight, the spiritual warfare we're involved in. A term of terror in the Soviet Union, the KGB was the Committee for the State Security of the Soviet Union. That is the Cheka. Cheka stands actually for the Soviet Union first had the Cheka, which later became the NKVD, which later became the KGB, and the Cheka meant Committee for State Security. Initially named the Cheka, an emergency committee founded 20th of December 1917 by the instruction of Vladimir Lenin. And the Russian Revolution, my friends in Russia say don't call it the Russian Revolution. That is to slander the victims. It was not a Russian Revolution. It was the Bolshevik Revolution. It was an anti-Russian revolution. It was not run by Russians. It was run by people who hated Russians, who wanted to destroy Russians, anti-Christians, pagans, anti-Christ. They were not Russians. They were anti-Russians. And so I've tried to avoid using the word Russian Revolution since then used the word Bolshevik Revolution. This is Leonid Trotsky, organising his checker. Bolshevik mass murdering thugs, and you'll see a film dramatising this tonight. The checker was established by Felix Dzerzhinsky under the instruction of Trotsky as in charge of the Red Army. The checker was tasked by the Politburo with arresting, torturing and executing the tens of thousands and later hundreds of thousands and ultimately millions of dissidents, deserters, reactionaries, counter-revolutionaries. You wonder, what's a reactionary? Well, we're reactionaries, we're not communists. What's a counter-revolutionary? Well, someone who works against a revolution, like missionaries, evangelists, Bible smugglers, you know. The checker. This was a disgusting mass murdering. Basically, to call him a mafia would be to insult the mafia. Machine gunning the people on the streets who were demonstrating against them. In this case, killed 169. You probably haven't heard of this. You've heard of Sharpeville, but you haven't heard of the millions killed in the Soviet Union by the Soviets. Dzerzhinsky, Iron Felix, as they called him, a hideous person. And there's Stalin and Lenin, and there's Dzerzhinsky and Stalin. Dzerzhinsky. In 1922, the checker was renamed the NKVD, the People's Commissariat for Internal Affairs. What innocuous names. I mean, these names almost sound nice. And here they are on May Day, the 1st of May, carrying these idols of Dzerzhinsky, hammers and sickles. And of course, they had Dzerzhinsky statues all over the place. Now, this includes border guards and archives, in other words, records on people, a spied known population. The NKVD is most notorious for running the Gulag, the forced labor camps. Gulag is the acronym for Main Administration of Corrective Labor Camps in the Cyrillic language. So, Gulag is a term that Alexander Solzhenitsyn coined in order to describe this monstrous network of 1,800 concentration camps, death camps, where Christians were worked to death. Now, look at these pictures carefully. There's very few, I've worked very hard to find these pictures. These are some of the very, very few pictures around of, like, this is Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Arctic hell of Siberia with inadequate clothes as a prisoner. Why? He wrote a letter critical of Stalin in private correspondence. And of course, they checked the mail, and that was enough to throw him into jail for a very, very long time. Here's a network of some of the most famous of the camps in the Soviet Union, and most people in the West don't even know about these. They had to go down into the belly of the earth, miles underground, bringing out different ore. They had to dig with primitive instruments, canals. Look at this, destroying whole forests, creating canals by just bare hands, shovels and wheelbarrows. Whole people by the millions mobilized, and almost all them Christians, to move rocks, break rocks, literally with hammers. And this was life. In fact, when you read One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, it's extraordinary. And at the end it says, this was just one day in the life of Ivan Denisovich. There were another 2,000-something, another exactly like it. Very few pictures exist of this Siberian Arctic hellhole. And the least we can do is pay attention to what our friends in Russia had to suffer at the hands of these Marxist criminals. These are propaganda pics that the communists took to show what nice conditions they're in. So this isn't the typical pictures, this is the best pictures. Yeah, this is what they published, because obviously you didn't exactly have the Red Cross allowed to visit. And these were people's conditions. These were the best conditions that they're willing to show to the world for propaganda purposes. This is how we deal with reactionaries and so on. And here is a funeral service. And clearing whole forests on their own, digging mass graves. Gulag boss, testimonies. These are some of the most murderous characters in history. Some of these people killed thousands of individuals with their own hands. And the testimonies of what these Cheka and NKV did, just absolutely monstrous. As Joseph Stalin said, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn says, everybody knows about the 6 million Jews supposedly killed by the Germans in the Second World War, But who speaks about the 66 million Christians killed by the Jews in Russia? Because all of them, the whole bunch, from Stalin, Dzerzhinsky, the whole bunch, Trotsky, they're all Jewish. Atheists, like Karl Marx. As Jesus said, they are the synagogue of Satan, whose God is Satan, and who have been murderers from the beginning. The liars and murderers of Satan was. You can read John 8, what Jesus says about the synagogue of Satan. These people are the synagogue of Satan. Yesov, head of the NKVD from 36 to 38, he is responsible for deaths of millions, something like 8 million just in those 2 years. Yesov. The chief executioner of the NKVD, Vasily Kolokhil, carried out some of the high-profile executions during the purges. And here are relatives coming to buy their relatives back there to pay for the bullets that killed their relatives to be able to go and bury them. These are Russian executions, Soviet executions, I should say Bolshevik executions of Russian people. How many people in the West are even aware of this? Like the massacre of the people in Ukraine, by the millions. These are very, very rare pictures. And there's very few people who even know of the graveyards. There are memorials and museums now being set up in Russia and Ukraine to remember people and put a face to the victims of communism who massacred the people. And of course they also ran espionage. And here is an American willing accomplice, Raymond Robbins in St. Petersburg, with KGB handlers. Political assassinations, of course, they're organized. And they had all kinds of special camps where they brutalized them. If you haven't read Torture for Christ, then you don't know the kind of things that these communist people are doing to Christians. Enforcing Stalinist policy and communist movements in other countries. And thanks to the treachery of Roosevelt, F.D. Roosevelt, and Churchill, and the Yalta Agreement, 50 nations, 100 million Christians were betrayed to the Soviet Union in the Second World War, which was meant to be a war for freedom. When I started my ministry to Eastern Europe, with Poland, all the way down to Albania, everywhere I had people saying, "What freedom? We never got any freedom. You betrayed us." By you, I meant you people, your allies, you know, your parents, the British, the Americans, a whole lot. You know, you betrayed us to Stalin, the most worst mass murdering dictator in the history of the world. The NKVD was officially responsible to protect the state security of Soviet Union through massive political repression, including kidnappings, murders, assassinations, locally and internationally. If you want to know what inspired the CIO in Zimbabwe, or inspired the internal security of Cuba, you've got to know what happened here. Just look at the gradients here and the height and the size of these wheelbarrows, and think about you pushing wheelbarrows like that day after day up and down to make whole canals by hand. Those designated enemies of the people were sent to gulag camps, and hundreds of thousands were executed by the NKVD every year. The families of those designated enemies of the people, including their children, were automatically repressed according to NKVD order number 486. The NKVD ordered show trials and the Great Purge 447. And here's 447 signed by Stalin. There was the Great Terror in the 1930s. The Holodomor. How many people have heard of the Holodomor of Ukraine, where 6 to 8 million Ukrainians died in 2 years? How many have heard of it before? There's a whole lot of studies that have come out, but these are not required reading in our school textbooks. And here's upper-class Lithuanians, 2,000 unexpectedly grabbed and shot back in the head, one bullet in the back of the head by the NKVD in one go. The Great Purge of Stalinist Russia, these are mass graves being organized in Smolensk for the Katyn Forest Massacre. Lithuanians murdered in June 1941 by Joseph Stalin, while the West was speaking about Uncle Joe as our great ally. Here's the security officers. These are NKVD troops. These are Stalin's commissars, the political officers. Victims in Lvov, in Ukraine. Relatives coming to claim the bodies of their relatives who have been executed. Active measures was a Soviet term for the actions of political warfare conducted by the Soviet security services, the Cheka, the NKVD, and the KGB, to influence the course of world events. And this has affected our history, and yet most people don't even know about it. They also collected intelligence and it produced politically correct assessments. Now, can anyone read this in Cyrillic? Do you know Cyrillic? What does this say? It's the most famous newspaper in Russia. Pravda. And what does Pravda mean? Truth. And the other one was Izvestia. There were two newspapers, Pravda and Izvestia. Pravda means truth, and Izvestia means news. So the people in Russia said to us, there's nothing true in Pravda and there's nothing new in Izvestia. Nothing true in truth, nothing new in news. This is the inspiration for 1984. I mean, the book by George Orwell. And when you read it and you think, yeah, this is very funny, but it couldn't happen. Well, it has happened. In fact, what he is describing in there was he's describing the Soviet Union. Now, that's coming to the West. Under the leadership of the great Stalin, forward to communism. That's what the stupid, mindless propaganda, what do you call it, Photoshop, early Photoshop version. I mean, there's no way the people were all excited about Joseph Stalin, but that's the way they made it. Playing cards of Joseph Stalin, I mean, he was like God to them. And you have these ridiculous statues. This is even in the 1980s, with Gorbachev as chairman. And look at this kind of hideous idolatry. I mean, is this idolatry or is this idolatry? This is like what you read about in Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar sets up this great idol you've all got about you. 70th anniversary of the KGB, 1987. And look at the size of these people. They've got this bust there like that. I mean, really? People willing to put up with it? It's not like we'd ever put up statues to a politician. Our country isn't that big. Active measures included media manipulations through disinformation. Now, this is important because we get disinformation. Do you know the difference between misinformation and disinformation? Misinformation is a mistake, typographical error, you know, honest mistake, no malice intended. Disinformation is deliberate disinforming person. So there's a difference between misinformation, like a typographical error, proofreading error slipped in, and a disinformation. Communists have departments of disinformation to produce fake documents, produce fake news, to completely fabricate things, and in fact make a whole lot of news about things that didn't even happen. In many cases, they can do that, or they blame the enemies for what they themselves did. They do that all the time. Propaganda, counterfeiting official documents, infiltrating churches, intimidating dissidents, they made as a high priority back in the 1920s at the first Comintern, to infiltrate Hollywood and to infiltrate theological seminaries. They saw the importance of getting control over Hollywood and getting control of our churches, and they've been busy for a long time. And you wonder why something's been done by the World Council of Churches. Well, they've obviously been hijacked by communist agents from early on. You can see it in the Southern Communist Party. You can see it in the Southern Council of Churches, I should say. Character assassins, fines, imprisonments, assassinations. They don't always kill an enemy. Some enemies are too dangerous to kill. They'd make a martyr. So the character assassin, that's their term, where they will spread false reports, create a scandal. And these days, you can actually rig up photographic evidence that's not even true. And isn't it quite boring? Basically, you could make a film where it looks like this person's done something which he wasn't even in it. It's extraordinary what digital, what do we call it? Special effects, CGI, I mean, it's frightening. Active measures include the establishment and support of international front organizations like the World Peace Council, setting up terrorist groups, wars of national liberation third world countries, where especially the Cubans played a key role. Anyone recognize this character? Yeah. Agostino Neto. Well, that's of course Castro, but this is Agostino Neto, the dictator of Angola, who said he has destroyed the Bible. You'll have to come, in 20 years you'll have to go to a museum to see what a Bible looks like. There will not be a Bible in the face of Angola, he said. He died in an operating table in Moscow shortly after that, and our mission alone took more Bibles into Angola than there were in all of Angola when he made that statement. So, false prophet. They infiltrate the World Council of Churches. Charles Spurgeon warned that the very church that the world likes the best is sure to be the church that God abhors the most. If we are loved by the world, then we are being traitors somewhere along the line. To be loved by the world means to be abhorred by God. And so infiltrating educational institutions has been a high priority. And this isn't called Sodom on the Hillside for nothing. In fact, our educational institutions have become indoctrination institutions. An education institution is meant to teach you to think critically, to ask why, to think outside the box, to criticize and to question everything. But they produce people, they don't tell you how to think, they tell you what to think. The entertainment industry has been controlled by the communists from a very, very early age. In fact, from the 1920s, it said the Communist Party was the only party in town in Hollywood. And it's true. Hollywood's become one of the best means of promoting communist agendas, especially breaking down the church, faith, love for country, and all the rest. Yep, I mean, that's a bit of a crude picture, but you get the idea. And there's no end of garbage in the news media as they try to destroy decent people. Do you know who Antonio Gramsci is? He was a co-founder of the Italian Communist Party, and he said that the civilized world so saturated by Christianity for 2,000 years, any country grounded in Christianity cannot be overthrown until the roots are cut. We need to have a long march through the institutions of the West, education, religion, and so on. Only then will power fall to a lap like ripened fruit. So what Antonio Gramsci said is, we must be cultural termites. You know what a termite does? Eats on the inside of the wooden structure. So imagine you've got a beautiful wooden structure, and you might repaint it, revarnish it, whatever, and it looks good. But on the inside, the beams, the pillars are being eroded. And one day, the whole thing's just going to collapse. It looks good. You can keep putting whitewash, varnish, whatever on the outside, but they're rotting away the inside. And you can see they've done that. Marxists have been infiltrating the five culture-carrying institutions. What are the five culture institutions in the West? Isaac, what could you say? The five culture-carrying institutions have got to infiltrate and hijack.
Schools, family,
okay.
Church.
Okay, well, you've got three of them.
Well, seminary.
Educational institutions, news media, entertainment industry, religious institutions, political institutions. Those are the five culture-carrying institutions that Marxists have identified that they must actually infiltrate. By the way, when Bill Clinton became president of America, they asked him, who is your mentor? Who do you look up to? He said, Antonio Gramsci. That's the only name he mentioned. Unbelievable. Well, here's Brezhnev, who initiated the first detente openness, and he let churches open up, and once they're all set up again, they closed down 12,000 Christian churches in his administration after he had this great time of openness, so they could see all the underground church came up, out, and then they wiped out over 100,000 ministers of the gospel were executed under under Khrushchev, who had just initiated this new openness at that time. And so you get all kinds of garbage, like this is class war music. Youth of a rising class discussing music and struggles. I mean, they have been infiltrating music for a long time. Break down the beautiful, break down that which builds up and inspires, and produce angry rap, rock, hip-hop, the sort of things that destroy all cohesion and enable people to think straight. If you listen to classical music, it literally improves your brain power. If you listen to rap, rock, and hip-hop and death metal, it literally destroys brain cells. Of course, you've got these cursed, blasted banksters. KGB General Oleg Kalugin described active measures as the heart and soul of Soviet intelligence. Who's this man next to Nelson? Anyone identify this man? KGB Colonel Joe Slovo. He was the handler for Nelson Mandela, who was nothing more than a puppet to the Soviet Union. That was testified to. We've got the Denton Commission, 1982. We had a top leader of the Southern Communist Party who testified in America that the ANC in South Africa is nothing but an agent of the KGB. It's totally and utterly controlled by the Southern Communist Party, which is completely controlled by the KGB. It's just an active measures of the KGB. The ANC is not a genuine black nationalist movement. It's a tool, it's a puppet of the Communist Party, which you can see why they only serve their ends. And this poor man, Mr. Bartholomew Chlapany, I knew his daughter, Pansy Chlapany. She was paralyzed by an AK-47 bullet that killed her father and mother in their home in Soweto shortly after her father came back from testifying of the Soviet control of the ANC in the Senate subcommittee in America for Soviet subversion. And Pansy Chlapany came with me to Frankfurt, to Germany, to the Kirchentag back in 1987. Mr. Scarborough was part of that, and we went up there to testify. Pansy Chlapany went with me, and I was pushing a wheelchair, and I saw these communist thugs come waving box of matches in the face, saying, "We're going to necklace you, we're going to burn you alive when you come back to South Africa." So, a paralyzed 18-year-old girl in a wheelchair. What kind of people can do that? I mean, if you wonder why we despise communists, Kalugin described active measures as subversion, active measures to weaken the West, to drive wedges in Western community alliances of all sorts, particularly NATO, to sow discord amongst allies, to weaken the United States alliance to the people of Europe, Asia, Africa, Latin America, and thus to prepare the ground for revolution. And if you're wondering who this character is, you know who he is, standing next to Uncle Nelson? Cyril Ramaphosa, yes, exactly. I mean, this man's also Southern Communist Party. He's a puppet just like the rest. He's a puppet of the KGB. Joe Slovo was the man behind him too. The Andropov Institute of the KGB in Yasinov near Moscow taught active measures as a system of special forces. Yuri Andropov went from being head of KGB and active measures to being chairman of the Soviet Union. The head of active measures department was Yuri Modin, the former controller of the Cambridge Five. You see these five hands? All with a communist hammer and sickle on. These are the five Cambridge graduates who were all top MI5 and MI6 agents, and these were recruited at university to work for the Soviet Union. Undermined British intelligence for decades. Some of the famous active measures conducted by the KGB, now documented by declassified archives, including setting up racial tensions in the United States by staging incidents, mailing bogus letters reported to come from the Ku Klux Klan, which is an active measures campaign of the Soviet Union. The Ku Klux Klan is a fraud. I mean, the present ones. Placing explosive packages in Negro sections of the American population under Operation Pandora's Box, KGB active measures operation. Fabricating the story that AIDS virus was manufactured by US scientists, one of their active measures. These are some of the KGB officers who carried out many of these operations. One Soviet department, the GRU alone, spent more than $1 billion to fund the peace movements in America. And $1 billion back in the 1960s was a lot more money than $1 billion is today. Just a lot of money. Look at this peace march. This is in a communist country. Full bathroom took this picture. See the world globe? Okay, you see North Korea's flag, you see China's flag. Fair enough. You see Vietnam's flag, right, okay, but isn't that the Danish flag there? Isn't that the Austrian flag there? Isn't that the Spanish flag there? What are they doing there? What's the Norwegian flag doing there? What's the Irish flag doing there? They're claiming every country for communism. This is a missionary religion. Communism is a competitor as well as a persecutor of Christianity. They described these movements as a hugely successful campaign and well worth the cost. They were funding the end conscription campaign in Cape Town in South Africa. Right down the road, you drive past the Rondebosch Congregational Church on the same road that we're on here in this mission. They were the headquarters for the end conscription campaign in Cape Town, funded by Soviet Union. KGB. Stanislav Lunev claimed the GRU and the KGB helped to fund every anti-war movement and organization in America, Great Britain, throughout Europe and South Africa. Why were we so important to them? Well, we were. Strategic minerals, strategic series. According to Oleg Kalugin, Soviet intelligence was really unparalleled. A KGB program would run all sorts of congresses, peace congresses, youth congresses, festivals, women's movements, trade union movements, campaigns against the United States and Europe. This is one of their books, Storming the Heavens, the Soviet League of the Militant Godless. Storming the Heavens. Godless Communists, Atheism and Society in Soviet Russia. Allegations that AIDS was invented by the CIA, all kinds of forgeries, fake materials targeted at politicians, the academic community and the public at large. The KGB installed governments and undermined governments. Like here. What are they doing here? Setting up the Berlin Wall at the Brandenburg Gate. Here, setting up puppet governments in Czechoslovakia in 1968. People in Prague telling the Soviets to go back home. Here, Red China, they set up Mao Zedong's bunch. That's over a massive part of the world's population. North Korea, also done by the communists. The KGB coordinated mass political repressions, establishment of subordinate secret services in all occupied territories. And this affects us because these are the primary people who've been killing Christians and destroying churches in the 20th century. The last attempted coup organized by the KGB was the uprising against Boris Yeltsin during the Russian constitutional crisis of 1993. This led to the abolition of the KGB and its replacement with the Federal Security Service, FSS, and the Foreign Intelligence Service of the Russian Federation. So the KGB effectively doesn't exist anymore. But one of the tactics used by the KGB was an adjunct provocateur, an inciting agent. And so many times they'd have somebody do an action which would seem to be done by the opposition in order to discredit the opposition. Make sense? An adjunct provocateur is an undercover agent who acts to incite another person to commit an illegal or rash act or falsely implicates others in taking part in this illegal act. And one of the classics they've done over and over in America is the Ku Klux Klan, which is, it's very nice when they wear hoods. Why do they wear hoods? It started out with them wanting to spook people by acting like ghosts. That's the origin of it. But now it's very useful because nobody can see who's under it, and therefore this is an easy way of agent provocateurs to do something and then blame it on others. The goal of an agent provocateur is to discredit or harm another group by provoking them to commit a crime or implicating them in a crime. Here, they put the respected Christian Confederate flag there to discredit the cause or the flag with people who are not even willing to show their faces, so you don't even know who they are, who are doing this. And the KGB said they've always found that very useful. In a trust operation of the 1920s, the Soviets set up fake anti-Bolshevik underground organizations like the Monarchist Union of Central Russia to control and neutralize opposition and counter-revolutionaries. For example, in South Africa, we know that de Klerk's government completely controlled the AWB. The AWB was an adjunct provocateur. And we've learned this from General Tini Kronovich, who's head of military intelligence. It was a deception operation, which is why everything they did was there to make the National Party look more moderate because they were so extreme. And then everything they tried to do, they was betrayed because they were completely controlled, infiltrated by the state. The KGB's used provocateurs to entrap and discredit anti-communist groups, which they describe as reactionaries and counter-revolutionaries. And so this has been going on for a long time. After the Second World War, many NKVD agents were sent to join and penetrate independence movements and create puppet rebel movements. They even were permitted to attack Soviet agencies and kill authorities, you know, local commissar, in order to gain credibility. They didn't care. Do you know Stalin sacrificed an entire army to be able to enhance the credibility of a triple agent that was working for the Soviets? And this helped set up the biggest tank battle in history, the Battle of Kursk, Operation Citadel, 1943. But in order to have the Germans trust the Soviet double agent, who was actually a triple agent, they let him give information that enabled the Germans to destroy an entire Soviet army. So they really trusted this chap as their best agent. Meanwhile, they don't care. Hundreds of thousands of their own people betrayed means nothing to them. There's no loyalty amongst these people. They don't even care about protecting their own. And so they would betray true resistance movements of partisans, and time and again you've seen this. Because there's no right or wrong. The party is always right. KGB General Alexander Sakovsky declared, in today's world, where nuclear arms have made worldwide force obsolete, terrorism should become a main weapon. And so they have been funding terrorist groups the world over, like the Viet Cong. None of these groups have ever freed anyone. None of them have made anything better. Ian Persepa declared the KGB was the primary instructor of guerrillas worldwide. The general, Sakovsky, even claimed, "Aeroplane hijacking is my own invention." So the KGB said, "We trained Black September and the PLO and all the others to hijack aircraft. This is a Soviet active measures operation. We couldn't send our armies to attack the West without consequence, so we trained terrorist groups to do it for us." By the way, Ian Mikhail Persepa has been described by Ian Fleming as his primary inspiration for the James Bond character. He was based on a Soviet spy in the KGB, but nevertheless, that was the primary human inspiration for his James Bond character, who of course is British. But then again, do you know who James Bond's boss was? KGB operative Sir Roger Hollis. M, who gave him his instructions, actually worked for the KGB in real life until 1968. In 1969 alone, 82 aircraft were hijacked worldwide by the KGB-financed PLO, just the Palestinian Liberation Organization. The havoc this caused. I remember back in the 1960s, traveling by plane, you could walk on, in fact, I remember in Rhodesia, going onto a plane and being told by the stewardesses, they weren't flight attendants, they were stewardesses, "Please ensure that your firearms are safe and securely holstered and that all rifles and machine guns are placed in overhead compartments." No jokes. Dead serious. That's the way it was in Rhodesia in the 70s even. But everything around the world changed when aircraft hijacking became, I mean, it massively increased costs, harassment, wasted time, millions of man hours wasted, standing in queues, security, this and that. But this is all as Soviet active measures. All of these terrorist hijackings, all of these blowing up of airlines, just over and over, they have created havoc. Not to mention Pan Am Flight 93, which happened not that long ago, 1988. The KGB established the PLO. Yasser Arafat is just a KGB operative. They regarded him as one of their assets, just like they regarded Nelson Mandela as an asset under the control of their KGB colonel, Joe Slova. This terrorist, Lahila Khaled, she was the poster child of the PLO, and so she would pose with these sort of things and, of course, encourage many Westerners to come and join the PLO. If you've watched the film Little Drummer Girl or read the book, then you understand how this works. And, of course, recruiting people by glamorizing terrorism. And of course, it's just PR. It's completely fake. The National Liberation Army of Bolivia was launched by Ernesto Che Guevara. Ernesto Che Guevara said, and by the way, he boasted that he had killed at least 4,000 people with his own gun, personally. That's executed, which included women and children. He's proud of it. But he said, "If Jesus Christ was alive today, I'd squish him like a bug." Well, Jesus Christ is alive today, and I can tell you that Che Guevara's on fire for Jesus right now. Jesus is squishing him like a bug. I mean, who does this arrogant SOB think he is, that he can make comments like that about our Lord? And this is the poster child. How many Christians foolishly have this dirty, unwashed, Marxist, mass-murdering thug on their T-shirts and think that he's some hero? He's no hero. And by the way, after murdering thousands, he screamed and cried and pleaded for his life when the Bolivian army caught him, and they did to him what he did to so many others. They put a bullet in his head. Che Guevara said, and this is a quote that the EFF quotes. You've got the EFF quoting Che Guevara. "Hatred is an element of the struggle, a relentless hatred of the enemy, transforming him into an effective, violent, and selective, cold-blooded killing machine. A people with a heart, hatred cannot vanquish a brutal enemy." This is the ideology of our enemies, hatred. Christ commands us to love, they command to hate. What is more powerful, love or hatred? It's put another way, what's more powerful, light or darkness? Not all the darkness can put out the smallest candle. In the Cuban Revolution, Che Guevara ran the slave labor camps and he organized the mass executions. He was Fidel Castro's supreme prosecutor and he was the most efficient executioner. Look at him sitting on what's meant to be the place for the Speaker of the House and the Parliament. I mean, this lack of respect for even this country's institutions. Every night, the walls of the Fort Navarro resounded with the fusillades of his firing squads. In just 3 years, from 59 to 62, over 4,000 executions, most by firing squads, are documented to have taken place under Che Guevara. All of these took place without a trial, without any fair trials or process of law. Che Guevara admitted, boasted, that he ordered several thousand executions. So, if people want to wear Che Guevara's face on the front of the t-shirt, they should put his quotes on the back. Crazy with fury, I'll stain my rifle red while slaughtering an enemy that falls in my hands. My nostrils dilate while savoring the acrid odor of gunpowder blood. With the deaths of my enemies, I prepare my being for the sacred fight. And I joil the triumphant proletariat with a bestial howl. A bestial howl? This sounds like Karl Marx. This man was also demon-possessed. If Christ stood in my way, I, like Nietzsche, would not hesitate to squish him like a worm. Well, Che Guevara, at this moment, is definitely being squished, incinerated and all the rest. This is a picture of him dead under the hands of the Bolivian army. The first battlefield is a rewriting of history. It would appear that anyone who's participating in glamorizing and promoting this Marxist mass murderer are not only advertising the ignorance of history, but are helping to reorganize reality and promote the undeserved hero worship of a communist killer. So if you see someone wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt, you should say, do you know whose picture that is you've got on your t-shirt? What do you know about him? And just hear what they might say. And it's highly unlikely they know anything about this man. And I think people should be pleased to be informed that they don't continue to make fools of themselves by wearing such an evil image. While Che Guevara could be brave while he's murdering disarmed civilians, including a 14-year-old child, he was cowardly when he was captured by the Bolivian army. This is what the revolution looked like not that long ago. Communist country sweeping down, surrounding our own and threatening our country. If we had not fought back in Angola, Southwest Africa, against the ANC, the PLO, SWAPO and others, if we hadn't been supporting Renamo in Mozambique and UNITA in Angola, this country would look very different. And most of us may not even be here or even be alive. In Congo, Zaire, Mobutu Sese Seko was a mass murdering thug. Idi Amin was another thug who was very useful for the Communist International, even though he is a Muslim, by murdering hundreds of thousands of Christians. And how many other clients in Africa have made themselves one-party dictators with Soviet support and aid, like Emperor Bokassa, who turned the Central African Republic, one of the most benighted, poverty-stricken countries in the world, into the Central African Empire, and crowned himself in a ceremony that cost more than the gross domestic product of his country. How many Africans have been put against a tree or pole and shot by their liberators in the name of freedom? And this is reality. This is what communism has done through SWAPO. Notice the Cyrillic script and the Chinese script on the mortars. Car bombs. I took this picture in Kalahari Sands, Windhoek, during this bombing in 1988. ZANU PF in Zimbabwe, murdering chiefs, headmen, Madibili, massacring people, cutting off ears, murdering missionaries, bayoneting babies, murdering missionaries, airmen, passengers, cooking and eating survivors. Robert Mugabe is just one other puppet of the Soviet Union and the KGB. Demon possessed for sure, servant of Satan, yes, but he's still a tool of a foreign agency. And these people on the ground who think that they're fighting for freedom don't realize they're just pawns of the banksters and the globalists in their agenda. And you've got all these people who are foolishly out there believing the lies of these liberators. Yep, they believe in freedom of speech. Just cut your lips off if you say something they don't like. Frelimo in Mozambique, Also, another communist agency, the MPLA, Marxist People's Liberation Army in Angola, the ANC in South Africa, Church Street bombing, totally rigged by the Soviet Union with the aid of the IRA, who's another client of the Soviet Union active measures. The PAC, the Pan-African Congress of South Africa, did the St. James terrorist attack, another client of the Soviet Union active measures. The KGB was also implicated in Mehmet Ali Agca's assassination attempt of the Pope, John Paul II, in 1981, because he was supporting anti-communist solidarity movements in Poland, of Lech Walesa. And they were standing up against communism. And there, can you see the gun in the hand? That's Mehmet Ali Agca holding the gun seconds before attempting to assassinate the Pope in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. That's why they started to make the Pope reveal with bulletproof glass. And here's this KGB agent, agent of influence, although he is a Turkish Muslim, being met by the Pope. Well, it didn't stop Solidarity defeating the communists and kicking the commies out of Poland. The GRU's, the Military Intelligence Union of the Soviet Union, they recruited Elga Hiss, who was an American lawyer, State Department official, who became the first General Secretary of the United Nations, later convicted of being a Soviet agent. Australia's delegation to the United Nations conference. Here you can see Nelson Rockefeller, who was Assistant Secretary of State of the Soviet Union of the United States, involved in talking to the chairman of the United States delegation to the UN. So the UN was set up from the very beginning by the Soviet Union's agents. And Whittaker Chambers later testified, yes, he was part of this bloc, this Soviet group under the KGB, of which the first General Secretary of the UN was part of. Elga Hiss, Whittaker Chambers. Whittaker Chambers' conversion and his testimony is very damning. And this is just one of many examples of how the Marxists have infiltrated to the very top. Handpicked by Franklin Delano Roosevelt to set up the UN. And everyone, Treasury Department and so on, these are all people who were top leaders in the United States and the United Nations, handpicked by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, all Soviet agents, and set up the International Monetary Fund and so on. Now, I could give you a few other examples, but let me just stop right there.